Are you tired of the same boring and unhealthy diet of corporate media propaganda and the distraction du jour? Your antidote is here at Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. Real, revolutionary, and relevant news and talk with fascinating and brilliant guests. Prepare to be informed and motivated with your friend and host, Cindy Sheehan.
Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan. Today, we welcome back political artist and commentator Anthony Frieda. And Anthony Frieda also has a podcast at Cindy Sheehan Soapbox, the Soapbox People's Network, called Frieda Rants. And today, Anthony and I are going to chat about rethinking Charlie Hebdo. So stay tuned, and we'll be right back with our Soapbox friend, Anthony Frieda. Anthony Frieda, welcome back to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox.
Thanks, Cindy. Pleasure to be here.
Well, when are we going to get another show? I'm going to put you on the spot right now. When are we going to get another Anthony Rants?
I know. I've been derelict in my duties. I have recorded a few. I did a few interviews and recorded a few podcasts, and it's my New Year's resolution to be more consistent and to put these things out at least once a month.
Awesome.
I'm really excited about it, and so there's more coming, I promise.
Do you want to give us a little heads up about, you know, the topics or whatever?
Well, I interviewed, I don't know if you know Richard Grove. He has some inside information about 9/11, and he's kind of a philosopher.
Mm-hmm.
A really interesting guy. I interviewed John Rappaport, who's an investigative journalist, independent thinker. And I'm also just kind of putting my own stuff out there just to get acquainted with the audience and have them know, who is this guy, Frieda, and why is he ranting?
You know? Oh, yeah, and I do just want to remind our listeners that that's Frieda Rants at the Soapbox People's Network. And you are a political artist, cartoonist, artist, whatever you want to say. And as soon as that happened at Charlie Hebdo, I don't know how to say it.
Yeah, that's right.
I took French for like 3 years, and I know au revoir and bonjour. That's all I know. But anyway, it's really useless in California to know French. I should have taken Spanish. Spanish. But anyway, I know more Spanish than French at this point. So anyway, as soon as it happened, I thought of you. And I was a little surprised about your initial reaction to it. So do you want to take our listeners through that? But of course, it didn't take you long to figure stuff out, because you already had stuff figured out before it happened.
Yeah, well, I was kind of in the throes of a 104 fever. I had the flu
right
when this happened. So I kind of, and it also, you know, it obviously hit home because I make provocative images for a living, and the idea of somebody being willing to kill or die over an image they find offensive is just, it's shocking to me. And these guys are my compatriots, and they did die in this brutal fashion. So I kind of had this knee-jerk reaction that I think unfortunately plays into the complete agenda of the establishment. This whole agenda of divide and conquer and Islamophobia and fear. And I mean, we've seen, what has the reaction been? I mean, all these great marches about freedom of expression, freedom of speech, but in real practical terms, what has been the result of this? The result has been to prop up the neocon arguments that we need endless war. It's been to divide us even further along racial and tribal and religious lines. It's been to, I mean, France was against, they spoke out against the NSA surveillance in America, and now they've changed their position since this incident, saying we need more spying. We need to have a French Patriot Act, they're saying. We need to, it's put them more in lockstep with the American foreign policy of endless preemptive war and this global war on terror and military adventures all over the world. So the net winner has been the police state, illegal spying, and endless war. I don't see any victories here for free speech. Just the quite the opposite.
Right. Also, you know, we see a clear hypocrisy in what is defended as free speech and what is attacked as hate speech. So it seems like in France, at least specifically, if you make these horrible images about the Prophet Muhammad or Muslims, you know, that's free speech. But if you speak out against Israel, that's hate speech and you get put in prison.
Yeah, that was very interesting. In 2008, Maurice Sinné faced charges of inciting racial hatred for pretty mildly anti-Semitic cartoons that he did for Charlie Hebdo. Now, and he faced these charges and he was fired by the magazine because he refused to apologize for them. And so there's definitely a double standard. I mean, these are the champions of free speech as they're firing somebody for his free speech. So there's hypocrisy everywhere. I mean, everywhere you look in this incident, there's hypocrisy. All the leaders who lined up in this march for free speech, like Netanyahu and Sarkozy and all these other guys, I mean, these are enemies of free speech. Mm-hmm. You know, Bibi has jailed and executed journalists in several campaigns in Gaza, targeted and executed journalists, and they admit doing it in 2012 and in 2014. So, I mean, to see him at the front of a march for free speech is just too much. I mean, like I say, the whole thing is drenched in hypocrisy and drenched in irony, and this just kind of very black and white narrative that's promoted by the mainstream it just doesn't bear out to be true.
And then, of course, there were millions of people tweeting hashtag Je suis Charlie, and so it just seems to me that, you know, there's always these knee-jerk reactions, and which you had a bit of a one, but I'm going to give you your fever, Andrew.
I'm going to give you your... Yeah, I'm still coughing. Yeah,
your fever and your closeness to the topic, but that's just what it does. People jump on these bandwagons without even investigating if the... you know, the axles or the wheels are sturdy, or if anything makes sense to jump on these bandwagons. When it all happened, I wasn't really paying attention because my daughter had just had the baby. You know, I knew it happened, and I knew right away that I wasn't jumping on any bandwagons until I was able to investigate it.
Yeah, and like I say, I know artists who knew some of the artists that got killed, so it does hit home, and it's very shocking. And I've had, believe me, as you know, my work's pretty controversial and provocative,
yes.
And I've had people send me emails saying they want to kill me, so
right.
I know there's people that want to kill me, so it really does hit home. And it's just bizarre to me that somebody would want to kill or die because of an image, because I mean, nothing is offensive as the reality of war. I mean, it's just a picture when you come down to it. I mean, people are offended by the wrong things. I mean, what offends me, I saw a video of a little girl in Libya who had her lower mandible blown off by one of our love bombs in Libya. And, I mean, that's what offends me, that, you know, this is being done in my name, my country's name, all over the world. And this is what people should be offended by. People should be offended when our politicians lie about why they send our kids into harm's way. They should be offended by CIA torturing people all over the world and raping them with battery acid and flashlights. I mean, these are truly offensive things. And there are things that we should take offense to and we should stand up for it. But they're not pictures. They're realities of pain and misery and war inflicted on innocent people. These are the things we should be offended at.
Well, also, it's like I'm getting a feedback. Hello? Testing. Okay. It's like also people like jump on, you know, this patriotism, this jingoism. I see bumper stickers all over my town, at least, that say, it's something about the flag. You know, it's like, if you touch my flag, I'm going to kill you. That's not the same, but that's exactly what the bumper sticker is. It really is like, don't touch my flag or I'm going to kill you. And so it's just like, really? Seriously, you're going to kill somebody because they, you know, burned a flag. So what does that say about your idea of what that flag is supposed to stand for, which is freedom of speech and expression?
Yeah, I mean, like I say, the hypocrisy is everywhere. You know, I mean, Obama has used more national security letters to silence whistleblowers and to quell free speech and imprison people who try to expose the crimes of this government. And at the same time, he makes speeches about, you know, free speech and, you know, lectures the world about it. And there's such hypocrisy everywhere. And then the first knee-jerk reaction is, we condemn these acts of violence. And meanwhile, Obama's number one tool all over the world is to use violence and coercion and threats of violence to impose his ideas upon the world. So, like I say, it's endlessly hypocritical, and it's just, and people are outraged by the wrong things, and it took this episode, it made it all so clear to me, you know, it's just what a fraud it is, and just how this whole thing is just propping up the ideas of the neocon agendas that you and I are fighting against, and all these things were in place, by the way, at the time. France has a police state. They have a surveillance state. They have, you know, they're involved with these wars on terror. And guess what? None of it did anything to prevent this act. So their answer is to double down on what hasn't worked. You can't stop something like this. It's impossible to stop something. Somebody's willing to die in a commando raid. You're never going to be able to stop that.
You just reminded me of another question, but I did have a question first. What do you make about all this stuff about Obama didn't show up at the march, or he didn't send a representative, he didn't send Biden and stayed home to watch football? What do you make of all that hype?
I don't know. I think it just plays into the whole thing. I mean, you know, Kerry made some speeches about, you know, the solidarity with it. And all the speeches, they're all just platitudes about freedom while these people are working aggressively to suppress freedom of expression in every law they enact and every Patriot Act style expression of authoritarianism and clamping down and taking away whatever rights we have and turning them into privileges. So, I guess it showed in some ways, you know, that he was disconnected from the whole thing. But I don't really know exactly what to make of that. It's going to be politicized, you know.
Right.
And everything he does is. But I'm not really sure about that one.
Well, for me, for sure. To me, it's a one thing he's done that I agree with, but I'm not sure what his motivations are. So
yeah.
So I don't know. And another thing is, I just read an article today by Paul Craig Roberts.
Yeah.
And he, you know, for the listeners, he was an assistant secretary of the Treasury under Ronald Reagan, but has become very, you know, open about the police state and wars and things like that, more on our side of the issues. But he said today, really, it didn't have the appearance of the attack on Charlie Hebdo didn't have the appearance of being an ideological Muslim attack, and it didn't seem like they were willing to die. It seemed like they wanted to do everything they could to escape from it, and then conveniently leaving the ID in the getaway car reminds me of the passport that was found in the rubble of the Trade Center when nothing else could have been found. The passport of one of the so-called hijackers.
Yeah, the black box, which is indestructible, was destroyed.
Right.
But the paper passport survived. Yeah, there's always questions. I mean, all of these incidents have people that are involved with the intelligence agencies, and it's always very, you know, very suspicious. I mean, the Kawachi brothers admit they were financed by known FBI asset Anwar al-Awlaki.
Mm-hmm.
And that's according to Lieutenant Colonel Anthony Schaefer. And he trained with the underwear bomber. So, you know, all of these networks are connected somehow to these shadowy covert CIA and FBI operations. They always are. It always turns out that way. So I don't know what to make of it all. But these guys are obviously highly trained professionals. And yeah, if they were so, they were so highly trained, so professional, but they brought their IDs to this thing. That's ridiculous. Well, they wore masks to hide their identity, yet they dropped their ID. Whoops! I mean, it's just silly. And but people just fall for the narrative, whatever is presented to them. You know, Wolf Blitzer said it must be true, man.
Well, you know, we always know that if we're going to a protest and there's a chance of arrest, we should have our ID with us. I mean, not just, you know, it's common sense so yeah. We can get out of jail earlier. But anyway, you know, and as pointed out for 9/11, you know, there's many, many theories about what happened that day and who was responsible. But the thing we do know is how it's being exploited to further the agenda of, like you said, the neocons, the neoliberals, the global security state and police state and war state.
That's right. It always is. I mean, they jump on the bandwagon. I mean, like I say, Lieberman's out there saying this shows why we have to have the endless war on Islam, and it props up this whole narrative, and it does nothing but divide us further along all these tribal lines and inflame these passions. And I mean, that's the whole power of, you know, this idea of this image of a terrorist as a shadowy boogeyman that was kind of conjured from our nightmares of the boogeyman as a child, and now it's been transformed into this public demon that we all project our hatred onto. I mean, these are classical archetypes that are being used on a psychological level to tap into our deepest fears and to make us want to have these compulsive rituals, these wars where we try to destroy the parts of ourselves that we hate. And this is what war has always been. And it's psychological manipulation, it's a manipulation of patriotism and tribalism and the instincts that we all have deeply ingrained in us. They can be so easily manipulated by propaganda that it's, and like somebody like, you know, you and I who are standing back and looking at it from the jaundiced eye, we can see it so clearly, so obviously. But it's also, you know, easy to get caught up in it because, you know, we're all human and, you know, we all have these desires for revenge and righteous, you know, indignation and, they're exploited endlessly. They always have into our history and their being today. And if we don't question the motives and the pretexts that take us into these conflicts, into these wars, then we're complicit in them. We need to examine and question every single pretext, because we know they presented us with fraudulent pretexts in the past. They lied to us about Gulf of Tonkin. They lied to us about the pretext that brought us into Iraq. So if we don't question every single new one that's presented to us, every single time, then we're fools.
Well, absolutely. And I'm going to get a little bit off the topic, but not too far off the topic. In December, the Senate torture report came out, and that was big news for a few days until the interview. All the so-called stuff happened about that movie, The Interview, where North Korea was supposedly hacked Sony and said, you know, they decided not to put the movie out, but then they did, and it almost went straight to on demand. It's such a crappy movie. But then, you know, this Charlie Hebdo thing happens, and today I just read that we're sending 700 people to train so-called rebels in Syria. And so I'm not saying that the Charlie Hebdo thing wasn't something that was newsworthy, but it seems like these surface tragedies or news stories or I don't know what I'm trying to say are put, what I think about our corporate media is what they want me to look at. There's probably something that's more important that they don't want me to look at.
That's well put. There's always an agenda behind. I mean, they have this incredible, you know, focus. I mean, absolute focus on certain issues like this Charlie Hebdo or that North Korean story, which I think turned out to be, the whole thing was so crazy. okay, we can't release it, or, you know, North Korea's going to blow up all the movie theaters, and then the next week they release it and nothing happens.
Right.
You know, I mean, I think it was the greatest publicity stunt in history, to tell you the truth. And
it also
plays into this. I mean, everybody fell for it. It's like I say, it's another manipulation of patriotism. People will line up to see this crappy movie because they thought it was a patriotic duty. And it's just, there's always an agenda. You have to look back and see what is the agenda? Who benefits from this ridiculous story? And why are they promoting it so heavily and ignoring things that are much more important going on all over the world? You know, I mean, you know, these dozen people that died in France is a horrible tragedy. And but, I mean, my God, you think it was the end of the world? I mean, people are dying by the thousands all over the world. You know, I mean, we're blowing up people with drone bombs by the thousands, and there's no outrage, but because of the Europeans or because it's the media focused on this, it becomes this cause celebre. It becomes this the most important thing in the world. And it's, I mean, you still, if you live in the West, you're still more likely to die from a lightning strike than a terrorist attack. So there's no context. There's no relative risk, you know, assessment. It's all just emotional and obsession and hyper focus on certain issues.
Well, you're also more likely to die from a cop here in the United States than from a terrorist. And that's even including, I think, the people who, like my son, the soldiers who were killed there. It's really, and that was a blip too for a while, but it was more about, you know, the violent protesters than the violent police state. And I use quotation marks around violent protesters.
Well, you know, I mean, I work with a lot of websites that kind of focus on police brutality, and I've seen, you've probably seen them too, I've seen hundreds of videos of police beating and tasering, and I mean, just like guys in wheelchairs and beating them up, and pregnant women, and on and on and on. And it goes along all color lines, by the way. It's not just, believe me, they don't just come up to a guy and say, oh, you're white, we're not going to beat you up. No, I can send you 100 videos of you right now of them beating mercilessly white people like Kelly Thomas. They beat him to death. He was a homeless guy out in Colorado, I think.
No, he was in California, Orange County. Terrible, terrible tragedy. Homeless, but mentally ill.
Yeah, and you watch the video and he's crying for his daddy. Oh, I mean, it's just heartbreaking. So, you know, there is this real issue of police brutality and of just this disconnect, this kind of, the more they militarize the police, the more they put them in a mental state where they're at war with the communities that they're supposed to serve. So it's not, it can't possibly end well when you set up the paradigm to be that way, where instead of serving these communities, they're at war with these communities. You give them military surplus equipment, you give them military training. The Rolex military coming back from Iraq and Fallujah where they were at war with the population. So, and there, you know, a lot of these guys are, you know, they've been through incredible trauma. So it's a situation built in to be confrontational, and we have to roll back this militarization of police. I mean, my God, is it what we want? We want to be in a third world police state where the police are at war with the population? It's sick.
Right. Well, you know, when you say white people get brutalized or all, it doesn't matter. I've been brutalized by the police myself. But it's something that's been going on in inner cities and ghettos for a long, long time. So it's just like
spreading out
to include more and more and more of us. But we have this paradigm, again, the propaganda dominant theme of being a police is a dangerous occupation. And it's not even on the top 10 list of dangerous occupations, I don't think. It's more dangerous to be a fisherman or something like that than it is, or a logger than it is to be a cop.
Well, it's interesting that, you know, this when these cops got shot in New York, kind of that put an end to the whole movement against police brutality. So
right,
these incidents also have a way of just shutting down dissent. You know, I'm not saying, I don't know what happened there again, but that incident shut down a lot of dissent. And I mean, I get hate mail from cops. I get hate mail from everybody. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I mean, I'm working for the same thing you were working for. I'm working for freedom. I'm working for peace. I'm working to expose corruption. I just want us to live in a decent society. I want everybody to be free and prosper, and have an ability to, an opportunity to prosper. I want to stop using all resources to kill people and divide the world. And, you know, I'm accused of, like, the book cover that I did for you.
Right.
I was got accused talk of being that. Racist for that.
Right. I was going to talk about that. It's very, yeah. And to me, it's like, it's an amazing book cover for the Obama Files Chronicles of an award-winning war criminal. And to me, I look at it, and Larry Pinkney, who wrote the foreword, looked at it, and he goes, that's spot on.
He's a racist.
Yeah, he's a racist.
Black Panther. Member.
He's a self-loathing Black Panther.
That must be it. That's the only explanation. But by and large, though, I got a lot of praise and support for that cover. So
Absolutely. There
was a few people who didn't get it. But whenever you're getting in territories of race, it is dangerous. That's like, I look at Charlie Hebdo's work, and I mean, I don't know if they were being ironically racist or what they were doing, but once you start getting into using those, you know, that iconography of racism is very dangerous territory. You can easily it can be misconstrued, especially when there's a language barrier or a cultural barrier. It can get lost in translation pretty quickly. So it takes, you know, they kind of were very ham-fisted about it. And I think when you're in those territories, you have to be very sensitive and very delicate.
Well, right to me, and I posed this on Facebook when I kind of came out of the baby, 24/7 helping with the baby, and my daughter was in the hospital and stuff like that. When I came out of it, I said, people were saying, oh, it's not racist. They weren't that bad. I said, well, you say that about, you know, the old cartoons with black people that have big lips and they're playing the banjo and they're bare feet. You know, do you say that about the cartoons of the Japanese with thick glasses and big teeth and, you know, Jews with huge noses? Do you support that? That's not racist? You know, because to me, it's like the same thing. But
yeah,
now
it's
okay to make fun of Arabs and Muslims now. I hope in a few years we're going to look back and equate that with those same, like you said, characteristics of racism.
Yeah, and the other thing about Charlie, I agree with you, and the other thing about Charlie Hebdo that I thought was peculiar was this, you know, all-out assault on faith and religion of all the Abrahamic religions. Now, I don't know where you come on this issue, but, I mean, I'm an agnostic. I don't know. I don't think anybody has the answers. But at the same time, you know, the people that I target with my pen are known war criminals.
Right.
They have blood on their hands. I mean,
absolutely.
I mean, they deserve whatever satire they get, okay? Mm. But when you impugn an entire demographic of a religion, you know, a billion Christians or a billion Muslims, I mean, there's a lot of innocent people that you're offending. I mean, Charlie Hebdo showed God sodomizing Jesus. I mean, what is the point of that? Is there a point? I don't get I don't understand what you're trying to say there, other than just antagonize people. I mean, they were sued 12 times by the Catholic Church, and, you know, probably for good reason, because they were trying to provoke religious institutions. They were taunting them. So, I mean, I think the artist has some responsibility. I don't know. I mean, I believe in free speech, and I'll defend it. And they obviously, they never should have died for any image that they created.
Right.
But at the same time, do you have some responsibility to rein in or to self-censorship? Self-censorship is not always a bad thing.
Well, and I had this discussion on my Facebook wall at Christmas time, too. I'm like you. I'm agnostic, atheist, whatever. But I used to be Christian, and, you know, so I do like have my jibes against the Catholic Church, but that's from experience, not from anything else. But, you know, who's that guy? Tyson deGrasse Martin, what's his name that does,
Cosmos
guy. What's his name?
Tyson deGrasse.
Right, and I don't remember his first name. But anyway, you know, he went on Christmas Day, he went on a tirade against Christians, which I agreed with everything he tweeted, but I'm thinking, timing and what's the purpose? You know, I don't like people's holy days. I'm not going to go and have these tirades against their beliefs or whatever. Because like you said, a lot of good people are in these religions. And so go after the institutions of oppression, which might be the Catholic Church. You know, the Vatican might be an institution of oppression. The U.S. government certainly is an institution of oppression. And the other things are just done to divide us.
That's right. But you need to go after the leaders of these institutions. Right. Don't go after the whole, you know, the whole faith. There's a big difference, you know. I mean, I'm going after criminals, you know, and there are criminals in the church, I'm sure. Unsavory characters. Go after them. Don't impugn the entire faith, because what is the point? I mean, when you show God sodomizing Jesus, I mean, if you saw that as graffiti on a bathroom wall, mm-hmm. you wouldn't say that's freedom of speech. You say that's disgusting graffiti. Now, so you have some responsibility. And like I say, I know I'm not contradicting myself. I can say at the same time they have the right to do this and say it offends me. You know, you have the right to be offended.
Right.
We all do.
And if it's freedom of speech, you have the right to express that in speech or artistic expression. And like you said, nobody should be killed.
That's completely insane. And that's scary, but it's brought a lot of issues to the forefront that I think is interesting. And I think the opposite is happening. I wish it would be a chance for freedom of expression to get some sort of support from the establishment, but I think the opposite is going to happen. Ironically and sadly, I think we're going to see the opposite.
Well, I think freedom of expression is what I do when I go protest. And, of course, protest is being there is an attack on our rights to protest and, you know, and our rights of expression. And absolutely, you know, the hypocrisy is just absolutely stunning. So you had an article that got a lot of attention called Rethinking Charlie, which can be read at, you know, the Soapbox People's Network. But talk about the response to that you've had.
Well, that was interesting because I actually had a Chinese blogger contact me. I don't know how they found that, but they must have... They must have seen it on your website, and they contacted me and said they want to reprint it in China.
Uh-huh.
So that was interesting. It's just amazing how, you know, the global reach these things got. It's like throwing a bottle out into an ocean with a message in it. You never know where it's going to wind up, and it winds up in some strange places.
Right.
So, you know, I've got the usual responses of support, and people want to kill me, and, you know, people just don't get it, but... you know, I think about these things all the time. This is what I do, you mm-hmm. know. So I'm very in tune with these issues, and I try to kind of decipher the information as it comes in and with a very critical eye, which you all should do, and put it out there as I see it. I mean, this is the way I see the world. I mean, I'm not God. I don't have all the answers, but... In this one particular area, I am an expert, and I am paying very keen attention and laser-focused on it. So I think my opinion has some value.
Well, it did resonate with people. And Anthony, Frieda Rance can be found at the Soapbox People's Network, the latest piece, Rethinking Charlie, and we will post it on the newsletter and, you know, so on. But you have your own website, too. Can you tell my listeners your website?
AnthonyFrieda.com. You can go keep up with my latest subversive activities there. And I have a Facebook page you can link to there, too. Where
not so subversive when we have websites. Where people can listen to us and, you know, see what we're doing. And where we're going to be.
I love the irony, Cindy. We're using these systems that were designed to control and surveil us to expose the fact that these systems are designed to control and surveil us.
Uh-huh.
That is poetry.
It is actually, isn't it? Well, Anthony, I hope you continue to, your health continues to improve, and we look forward to the next installment of Frieda Rants.
Thank you, Cindy. I love you.
I love you, too. Thanks for being on Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox again. Well, that's Cindy Sheehan Soapbox for this week. As always, I hoped you were informed and inspired to do further research and to take further action or to just take any action. As always, I'd like to thank my engineer, Don DeBar, my production assistant, Dee Dee Miller. I'd like to thank Anthony Frieda for his wonderful work, and I'd like to thank you for listening and supporting the show. I'm Cindy Sheehan. You've been listening to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. Peace out for now.